Today on Vox Talks Economics, the long shadow cast by the Spanish Civil War. The Spanish Civil War that ended in 1939 was brutal and destructive. Does it still affect how Spanish people think and behave today? Felipe Valencia Caicedo of the University of British Columbia and Anatol Prats of University of California Merced are the authors of a new paper that argues that this short but savage war still casts a shadow. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics, both of you. Hello, Felipe.
Hi, Tim. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you again, too. And Anna, hello. Welcome to you.
Hello, Tim.
First of all, some history. The war starts in 1936. How does it start? What did the two sides in the war believe?
The war started with a military uprising.
Rise of a revolution. July 18th, 1936, and Madrid, Spain becomes a seething city as revolt in Morocco by troops under then-Governor Franco spreads to the Spanish mainland.
So it was a coup led by the military. So it was led by part of the military that was supported also by right-wing forces.
Women prepare to take active part in battle, and suspected rebel sympathizers in the city are rounded up.
Fascists, religious conservatives, monarchists, and the coup was plotted against the democratically elected government, the Second Spanish Republic, which was governed by a left-leaning coalition.
Men fall by the hundreds as Madrid struggles for survival.
The main cleavage of this war was ideological, with the military rebels, also called nationalists, on the right and the Republicans on the left side of the political spectrum.
And when this war starts off, how did ordinary people in Spain and the communities that they lived in, how did they respond to it?
The response was highly heterogeneous and reflected the complex political and social dynamics of the Spanish society already at that time. Many people, especially those with strong political convictions, volunteered and joined the militias. Others, especially in big cities, joined demonstrations or protests. There were others that went instead into hiding or sought refuge as soon as violence escalated and spread across the country, so highly heterogeneous. But what it's true is that the conflict deeply divided the nation. It pitted neighbor against neighbor, and it tore communities apart.
During this war, I described it as short but savage. How many people died, and how was that divided between soldiers, combatants, and the civilians?
The exact number of deaths is still a matter of dispute, but the estimation is around 500,000 people died during the 3 years war. And that's out of a population of 23.6 million in 1930, so around 2.5% of the Spanish population died. And now you mentioned how many soldiers, how many civilians, and that's also a fact of the Spanish Civil War that it affected massively civilians. So it's estimated that around 200,000 civilians were dead due to political violence, to repression against civilians. And around 200,000 soldiers were killed in combat. And then there is an indeterminate number of deaths due to hunger, bombings, and other related incidents.
After 3 years of this, the war comes to an end. When did it end? How did it end? What sort of peace came after this war in Spain?
The war officially ended in April 1st, 1939, with the victory of the nationalist sides of the rebels that were led at that point by General Franco, Francisco Franco.
2.5 years of siege have ended. Madrid, the heroic capital of the Spain of yesterday, has surrendered to the forces of General Franco.
Franco established a dictatorship that lasted almost 40 years until his death in 1975.
Now in the spring of 1939, government resistance has ended.
So the quote-unquote peace in Spain after the Civil War was characterized by Franco's regime, which was authoritarian and used a lot of censorship and repression. And it was only after his death and with the subsequent transition to democracy that Spain was able to break free from this past and embrace democratic principles and values.
You call it a quote-unquote peace. Was there any attempt afterwards to come to terms with what had happened during this time where people within communities were pitted against each other? Or did people at least on the surface try and forget about it, get on with their lives?
Not in the aftermath of the war, and certainly not during Franco's dictatorship. But that's because the regime sought to reinforce a narrative of national unity and basically imposed collective amnesia and collective silence. So discussion of the war was taboo in public discourse, and attempts to investigate or memorialize victims were met with repression. There were, of course, some private acts of remembrance within families, but those were kept in private, sometimes in secrecy, because could be seen as form of resistance against the regime, right? So it was only after Franco's death and the transition to democracy that this process really started in Spain, and Spain started to confront their past a bit more openly. And that was a key point during this transition in 1977 with the amnesty law that granted a blanket amnesty for political offenses that happened both during the war and during Franco's dictatorship. And the law emphasize forgiveness and forgetting. It has been highly criticized because it did not really address the issue of accountability for the crimes committed during the war, during the dictatorship. So that has led to a lack of justice for victims and their families.
We previously spoke to Felipe about his research into the effects of a covert war from 50 years ago that is still causing collateral damage today. Listen to our episode, The Secret War in Laos, from November 2020.
Okay, so in this paper, you set out to study what you've called the long shadow, the influence of the war on social political outcomes, much later, 8 decades later. But let's start with the short-run effect. What do we know happened in the short run, the effect on social capital?
Obviously, there is a devastating effect of war in the short run, and I guess we have seen that in the news, unfortunately, very lately. And in terms of the economics, what do we know? Perhaps one of the most famous meta-studies, Does War Foster Cooperation, posits that maybe war could have a positive effect on cooperation, altruism, and even trust in the short term. And as you were saying, what we're trying to do in this study is to look at what happens in the very long run. So once the dust settles, even 80 years after the war, as Anna was mentioning before, this is a civil conflict, this is affecting the civilian population. Is this good or bad for trust? That is the question of the paper.
You are economists, so you have to empirically measure these effects. Is it difficult to do this 8 decades later?
Yes, it is. And these types of studies have to parse historical data, have to complement it with modern sources. Some of these modern surveys of the Spanish Sociological Institute, voting. And of course, as you know, Tim, we try to isolate what caused what in these types of studies.
First of all, you're looking at the long-run impact on trust. There are theories about that, aren't there? What are these theories that made you think there would be an impact on trust that's transmitted through generations at this point?
Yeah, and this one is only three, but there are papers that go even further back in time. For instance, Nathan Nunn and Leonard Watchington have a famous study looking at the relationship between mistrust and slavery in Africa. So regions that exported more slaves have less trust today. There's other researchers that have looked, for instance, at the long-term impact of the Stasi spying apparatus in Germany. So we have something similar in mind, something that happens in the past that destroys the social fabric of a place, in this case, Spain.
And so, of course, to do this, you need to have some kind of measure of the intensity of the conflict, some kind of proxy for that, and some kind of measure of trust as well. How did you do that? What did you use?
For the Spanish case, actually, there's very rich data, geolocated data on the mass graves. So this is a bit of gory details, but there are exhumed mass graves. So we not only know their location, their number, but even the number of victims that are found there, because obviously there was an exhumation process. So that we have at the very detailed level. And what we did that was to merge that with this data that I was mentioning of the Spanish Sociological Institute that asks questions on generalized trust, but also questions like, do you trust the state, the church, and other institutions?
You read anything about the history of Spain in the 20th century, it's very obvious in Spain that conflict doesn't just happen in random places, it happens in places where people have grievances and people are set against each other. How do you cope with that if you're trying to get a causal effect?
Yes, correct. So this is important both historically, as Anna was mentioning before, but also economically. This is the crux of the matter in these types of papers. So in this case, we use instrumental variable strategy. Mm-hmm. So put simply in words, what we exploit are deviations from the plans of attack. So we know what the plan of attack was going to be, but we also know when and how troops deviated, kind of like as a plausibly exogenous variation.
So putting all this together, what aspects of the war did have an impact on trust? Trust in who? Trust in what?
We are mostly focused on political violence, which our main proxy here would be exhumed mass graves. Mm-hmm. And we find that this has a negative and significant impact on a generalized trust, but also on trust in institutions that are more associated with the war. Think about the civil guard, even the church, and not institutions that were created after the 1975 democratic transition that Anna was mentioning, like the ombudsman and other types of constitutional courts.
You also tested the political impact on the war. Again, why might people generations later vote differently because of what happened in the Civil War?
Yes. So first, for answering that, we will need to understand why people change their political identities due to the repression exerted during the war. Our hypothesis that we test in the paper is that people adapted their political ideologies to the ones that were promoted by the ruling regime. And this was done purely to maximize survival chances and to avoid reprisals. There was this very intensive use of political violence that we've mentioned, and this was targeted against people that were thinking differently than the ruling regimes. So people just started to change their behavior and they really deter their expressions of dissent. They act more obediently. And what we argue is that this eventually shaped also their political preferences. And then you also ask, but why do we observe this three generations later, right? Mm-hmm. So we also do an exploration of these potential mechanisms of transition over time, of persistence, and conclude that collective memory, along with anti-Francoist sentiment, is a plausible channel through which these initial effects of conflict were reinforced and perpetuated over time.
So to be clear on this, in the areas where, for example, the nationalists were dominant, then people still vote according to what they were sort of forced to vote in the past.
You got it exactly right. We have this natural experiment. The most important battlefront in Spain was the front line of Aragon. Mm-hmm. So in that region of Aragon, it was basically split in half. And for almost 2 years, national troops were stationed on one side and Republican troops on the other side. So we apply a regression discontinuity analysis there, and we compare how do people vote since we have democracy again in Spain on both sides. And we see what you were exactly mentioning, that on that side in which the nationalist state for almost 2 years, people today are voting more for the right. And on the other side, when Republican troops more left-leaning state for almost 2 years, they're voting more for the left.
Did this surprise you? I would have thought that there might be feelings of revenge, feelings of resentment, especially considering the level of violence that happened to civilians in the war, yet we see the opposite.
Yes, exactly. I think it's explained by this really deeply ingrained fear of reprisals and this very long dictatorship that continued the repression, and with the help of this political propaganda, this collective memory that was formed. What political scientists have explained also is that when the violence exerted is not indiscriminate, but it's selective, then instead of generating this revenge that you're talking about, Tim, it might actually deter disloyalty and make you obey. And this is what we're finding in our context.
This is fascinating that you have found not just an effect, but quite strong effects in these cases. Both of you have studied the history of conflict and the effects of conflict. Were you surprised to find these large effects 80 years later?
I remember when I first started investigating this topic, I interviewed the son of who was the Republican mayor in my hometown. One of the things that stuck from that interview was when I asked him, "Do you think this is still lasting?" And he said, "It's gonna last for 3 generations. He was right. The wounds of the past remain open still for many Spaniards.
One thing, Tim, to remember here is that it's not only the war itself, and I think that this is another general lesson from this study, but the way that the collective memory works. And this is not only true for the Spanish Civil War, but also for the US Civil War, for the China-Japanese confrontations during World War II. What is the narrative that you start telling about this conflict? Who shapes this narrative? The Francoist won. Franco was in power for several decades. What is the narrative of this historical event, and how is that shaped through the state, through citizens? Till the 2000s, there were streets in Spain that would have pro-Franco or Franco-related names. Every day you would be reminded about this conflict. It happened long ago. It's still here with us today, at least in Spain.
When I read this paper for a couple of months ago, it sent me straight back to all the literature that came out of Spain's experience in the 20th century, and then also sent me to look at what happened with the exhumation of the mass graves. And that really does show why there is a long shadow. Thank you very much, Felipe. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Thank you, Tim.
The paper is called The Long Shadow of the Spanish Civil War. Authors Anna Topratz and Felipe Valencia Caicedo.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Center for Economic Policy Research. We bring you new research in economics every week. And if you're enjoying our episodes, leave us a review. Next week on Vox Talks. As the IMF launches this year's Global Economic Outlook, new evidence on how hobomership is distorting the effects of monetary policy.